League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome back to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity expert and stock market commentator Paul Scott to talk all things small caps. So welcome, Paul.
Hello, Paul, and hello, everyone. Great to see you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, well, the big burning question I know on the audience lips, Paul, is how you got on last night against Luke the Nuke down the alley pally at the semi-final of the PDC World Darts Championship. How was it on stage?
The one on the right looks more like me a year or two ago.
But yeah, no. You, I think unfortunately you'll have to think about next year to win. So you'll have to give that one a bit of a miss, I guess.
Yeah.
Let me take that one off. Anyway, today we've got a bit of a special because we've been a bit short of data from corporates. We're going to run through my sort of like top 20, and Paul's going to deliberately be the devil's advocate to sort of like test some of the investment theses behind it. But before we sort of do that, Paul, just looking into sort of the crystal ball for the quarter one and for the rest of the year. We've got Trump coming in on the 20th of January in his inauguration. We have obviously got some potentially tariffs and immigration there, and we've got a real series of the US earnings seasons kicking off, plus we have a lot of profit announcements, year-end trading updates coming out on on this side of the Atlantic as well over in January, really busy time. So putting all that into sort of like the mix, how are you thinking about sort of January and February and Q1 in totality?
Well, in totality, I don't really take US politics or anything like that into consideration because I don't think it can really affect my investing very much. So I largely ignore that. I'm feeling we could have some profit warnings in Q1. I mean, the UK economy definitely went through a soft patch. We know that, partly because of all the budget uncertainty. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see a few more profit warnings in Q1. Then, of course, in Q2, at the beginning of Q2, you've got the big hike in wages, costs and NI. So you've got those two headwinds, I think, early in 2025. Those are known factors now, and I think they're probably priced in to most stocks. You know, I accept that out of a portfolio of 20 or 30 shares, I'm probably going to get one or two profit warnings. That's par for the course. We can't avoid that. But my overall view for the year is actually reasonably positive. And I covered that today, funnily enough, in my podcast, where there was an interesting survey of economists in today's or yesterday's Times, which actually said that this survey of economists was actually fairly positive. They're expecting 1-2% GDP next year, or the consensus, you know, the majority view. They're expecting 3-4 quarter point cuts in interest rates, probably back end loaded. So and of course AIM and a lot of small caps are so ridiculously cheap. You can pick up fabulous yields. You're going to get a lot of takeover bids. I think it's really important not to get bogged down by this air of doom and gloom, because everybody's thinking, oh, I should be buying an S&P 500 tracker or buying the Magnificent Seven stocks, which are amazing companies, amazing shares. Mm-hmm. But actually, I love the value and things like REITs, where you could just sit back collecting an 8% dividend. You know, I think there's a lot going for the UK small caps market. So I'm positive. Yeah.
I'm very positive as well. I'm really looking forward to sort of like 2025. And certainly that's sort of like come through in my sort of top 20 selections. Let me put those on, the ones are going to go through. I mean, we've got software, we've got a bit of healthcare, we have industrials, and we have sort of fintech as well, and a bit of consumer. And what I would say, one trait or a couple of traits which cross through most of them is firstly that they're sort of like high gross margin, niche areas, and they've got scalable business models. But also coming back to what you were saying in terms of potential takeover targets, I think quite a few of them, and I'll step through some of them as we go through and we can debate it. I would say as a wealth warning and a bit of a health warning, is that my hit rate is only around about 60%. Okay, so 40 in the balance of probability, if the last 25 years is any guidance, the next 12 months, then 40% of these are likely to go down. But when you look at it over on a sort of portfolio basis, it should make progress. And certainly my own portfolio has done sort of nearly 15% over 25 years. So you've just got to if you go into the small cap sector, you've got to be fairly thick skinned and resilient to be able to take those knocks.
Yeah, and well done, Paul, on the transparency. I think it's excellent. You know, people say, oh, we're just talking our own book. Well, the way I look at it is there'd be something pretty wrong if you were giving your top 20 favourite shares and you didn't own a fair chunk of them, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
And again, you've clearly stated which ones are Vox clients. So I don't think people can complain about that. And also, just to quickly say, I've got a lamp on order to light up my face. I mean, I'm looking a bit in the dark today, so don't worry, I'm on it and it'll be better next time.
Yeah, well, you'll certainly get a lamp on if you ever get to the final of that PDC next year against Luke the Nuke. I would just reiterate your point, actually. What's quite interesting, I find, it's the when it comes to sort of selection, it all comes down to the quality of the analyst. And I've spoken to the vast majority of these companies, so I've kicked the tires on a lot of these. So I've not only done the desktop, but I've actually sort of like, you know, spoken to them. And that's really key, because if you're just a person who's writing a newspaper article in the press, then most of the time they hardly do any desktop review, and they certainly don't go and speak to the company. So it all comes down to the quality of the analyst to be able to size up the upside and downside.
It does. And also, just to add a point on that, I was listening to, actually, I think it was one of your fund manager reviews, and the guy you were interviewing, I can't remember his name, but he's a well-known one, it might come back to you, he touched on DP Poland, which I've always rejected out of hand because the figures are so bad. But when he gave the background of the new CEO, it became very readily apparent what the opportunity there actually is, so which I'd never really looked into. So that's just to echo your point that desktop value type basis analysis, quick reviews I do is all very well, but it can miss the big picture about what management are actually like and what's going on within the company. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move on to one particular stock. Let's go for my second biggest, actually, in my portfolio. I own about 15%. And we've talked about it a bit, but it's basically a build tech visualization software company. It does a lot of project management. It's been going through its transition from a perpetual license to a SaaS over the last 2 years. It's got about three quarters of its business now recurring, makes really good profit margins. And it's now the one bit in the piece of the jigsaw that had been missing was like-for-like sales growth of double digits. And I think currently in the first half, they did 12%. And I've got a sneaky suspicion they're going to beat that next year. And the big tailwinds are global infrastructure spend, increasingly environmental regulations for, you know, when you build properties and infrastructure. And if we do see actually a resolution in Ukraine, and these could well be big winners. But regardless of that, that's just all jam. That's just all sort of like, you know, extra sort of the cherry on the top. When it comes to value, this one's done really well for me. I think there's still plenty of upside, even though it's at about 150 at the moment. My fair value is at 190. Cavendish is at £2. But I do think this is a potential takeover target because of the actual gross margins are near enough 90%. And this is a bit like, to me, your Interseed, because it's a trophy asset that has got brilliant customers and extremely high gross margins. So if it was ever bought out, it would go for a big number because it'd be a multiple of sales rather than PE. But anyway, what's your thoughts on it?
I like it. It's a good business. I've followed this for many years. I've never got comfortable with the valuation. And then in the last year, it's doubled. So it's, you know, the valuation started off high and now it seems to me very high. But I do take your point. The forecasts have barely changed in the last year. They're pretty much flat. So this is more, I would suggest, a PE expansion story that's driven that share price rise. I take your point, though, about the SaaS transition. A lot of smaller software, well, all software companies have been doing SaaS transition, which takes about 5 years, doesn't it? And it does artificially suppress growth. So it could well be, certainly looking at the forecast, it looks like the next 2 years are going to see really strong profit growth. So it's got to hit those forecasts. So I think it's very nice. They've not diluted much at all, less than 10% in the last 6 years. I think it looks a very nice business. Probably for me personally, price up with events at £1.45. But, you know, it's been a great call, Paul. You've got it right. And as you say, these things are really premium assets, aren't they, in the current private markets? You know, we just had a big takeover bid for Windward, which is a sort of AI technology data sort of play, isn't it? And it wasn't even profitable. And I think the bid was over 200 million. So, you know, a value GARP type investor like me is not the right person to really value these things, because they're probably going to be worth a lot more than I think they are.
Yeah, I think you just, it's that arbitrage between public and private markets. I mean, the same thing happened with the geospatial company IQ Geo, which again was unprofitable and it went up sixfold. It was taken out at about 7 or 8 times sales. And their competitors in industry sort of transactions are at about anywhere between 8 and 12 times sales. These ones currently trade, Alico currently trades at 3 times. But you can understand the math. It isn't stupid math. And the reason is because if it's 90% profit, gross profit margins, you take everything below that out, and then basically you're growing your top line at 15%. Then all you do is put your tax in 25%, and therefore you get a notional, you know, basically just a cost synergies determined PE ratio of about sort of 14, 15 for the buyer. So you can see how you can get to those because the gross margins are so strong and the recurring revenue stream.
And of course, stripping out all the unnecessary listed costs. The only thing I would say on that is what I have noticed is that with software companies that have these very high gross margins, there's a lot of stuff buried in admin, which is actually directly, you know, like paying out commissions to salespeople. You know, it's not, I would say, necessarily 90% plus gross margins as such. And also, management always seem to find extra things to spend money on when they do get higher. You know, so the drop through is more theoretical than actual, I would say. Or, it's not pound for pound. That's all I'm saying, you know. And obviously management will want share options and all the rest of it. But I think, don't get me wrong, I think it looks a really nice business, this one. So how much do you think it can scale then? Is there a sort of building global opportunity here with it, or?
Yeah, well, I think the sales are roughly around about 36 mil for next year, I think.
Which is small, isn't it? So, I mean, presumably its end markets could be, God, huge multiples of that potentially, I would imagine.
They've just basically built a beachhead in the US, and that's a real sort of, you know, dial mover if they can rate mill traction. And they're using third parties to basically, they sell directly in Texas, but are using third parties to actually develop that business. And if that can, and they're getting really good endorsements from their customers. But anyway, I've held it for 10 years and I'm going to continue holding it because it's a trophy asset. Okay, let's move.
I like that one. There's not much institutional interest in it. Looking at the big shareholder register, it's individuals who I'm assuming are probably founder director type people, are they?
Well, you've got James Thorne at Columbia, and you've got Gervais Williams at Premier Mite, and Andy Brough at Schroders. So you've got a reason.
But they're all sort of 5% and less, aren't they? That's normally the top holders or institutions. So are these guys, H. Allen, John Ketley, John Lee, they're the three biggest shareholders. Are they management, do you know?
John Ketley used to be the CEO of it, and he retired. Yeah. He's about 70. Herb Allen, I think it is.
Right.
H. Allen, he's basically a media mogul who runs a big sort of like shindig with people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates every year in Silicon Valley. And then you've got, who's the other one again? Somebody?
John Lee with 6.6.
John Lee, that's not the Lord Lee either. That's somebody, a separate one. But
because I think if a founder retires but still keeps an 11% stake in the company, that I think is a very nice, well, assuming he doesn't want to sell it and can't, but I think that's a very encouraging signal. What do you think?
I, to be perfectly honest, it's going to get bought out. I'm just convinced. Yeah. Either the Autodesk, Bentley Systems, Nemenschek, anybody of their big competitors who are on sort of 8, 9, 10 times sales. It's just so ingrained within their customers. Mm. But anyway,
I should have just bitten the bullet and bought these when I thought it was still expensive. The trouble is, this is the problem with value investing. Often you won't buy the best companies because they're too expensive, and then a few years later they've ten bagged.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's move on. We've got another software which I haven't talked about before. Is ActiveOps that I own, and this one does basically AI powered automation software, largely for the banking, insurance, healthcare, and business process outsourcing industries. It's got some really choice customers like Nationwide, TD Bank, and I'm. It makes basically if you've got a large sort of like complex internal activities which need to be like KYC or know your customer or approvals and all this sort of stuff, then their software maximizes the workforce of that particular business with staff productivity and SLA adherence. Yeah. It's now even more relevant in terms of a hybrid world. And also, given we've had the increasing in employers' NI automation, and they're putting a lot of AI sort of automation powered type apps and software, which is helping their customers. They've just got through the break even point. They've been EBITDA profitable for about 18 months, but now they're profitable at the bottom line. Interestingly, I spoke to Hargreave Hale, who are one of their shareholders, Guy Feld there, and he said,
"Oh yes, this is very well known." Yeah,
this was about November, and this was his top pick. He thought, but I've owned them for 3 or 4 years, and again, it's just like a 90% SaaS type business, high recurring revenue streams. And I thought it was interesting in their last set of accounts, the CEO and founder, Richard Jeffrey, I think it is, he said he's got a fantastic springboard going into next year, and he's quite a cautious guy. So for him to say something like that, and again, I think it's a trophy asset or get bought by somebody. The problem is with this Analico is if you want to put a big number of, buy a lot of shares, the liquidity is not that great. So you have to wait until there's a stellar.
Yeah, interesting. The only thing, I looked at the interims actually in my Substack daily article on the 14th of November. H1 results, here we are. Yeah, again, I just had quibbled over valuation, which, as we've already seen, could even be a contrarian indicator.
Yes.
So I've said here it only makes a modest profit of about £1 million per annum. And I didn't think the growth was rapid enough to justify a premium rating. It looks as if the market's doing, was it though? It looks like actually it was the publication. In fact, it was the publication of those interim results took about 20% off the price, didn't they? So it seems to have had a bit of a, so how much do you think that it is the fundamentals that have knocked the price back recently, or whether it just got a bit ahead of itself in August, in July, August, do you think?
No, I just think people have made some money and took a bit of profit off the table. Yeah. It didn't beat expectations. I mean, if you look at the price currently, it's about 110. It trades at 1.8 times sales. And again, this is 90% gross margins. It's the same argument as Alico when it comes to public-private valuations. This type of business would go at well over 6 times sales if it was actually bought. The thing it won't be bought is because the CEO owns 30% of the company and he won't sell for anything less. But as I say, if you've got a long term time horizon, then to me, the bigger prize is waiting for this to be taken over, effectively like Alico, even though it may get in on a standalone basis on a public market, it might look expensive at a PE, but on a private valuation where you get huge cost synergies, then it's dirt cheap, basically.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, you could well be right, Paul. And I mean, it's no good fighting against what the market's doing, is it? If there are people prowling around looking to buy these companies and they're prepared to pay top evaluations, then that's the place to be hunting, isn't it? I mean, my 2024 share picks were very successful, up. They achieved the same percentage gain as the S&P 500, about 24% for the year. But the interesting thing is that two out of the three well, there were about five big winners in that portfolio. I got lucky, but two of the two, I think the two biggest were Beaks and Interseed. Again, similar sort of thing to your ideas.
Yes,
software companies
are.
That look optically expensive, but have got that, you know, those sort of niche valuations. So it's definitely an interesting hunting area. And being too, trying to be too clever over valuation is not sensible right now. Paying up for these things, I think could well be the right decision.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, I try and sort of bias mine to GARP, high recurring revenue, scalable business models with high gross margins in niche areas. And if you do that, then you can, obviously a few of them are going to go south like any other selection, but you only need one or two to do well, and you two, three, four, five times your money.
Yes, you're right. Do we know with this one whether it's just straight out the box standard software, or is it customized and bespoke for each individual client? Because that can be a problem if it's, you know, essentially a bespoke product for each individual client.
They're not bespoke, but there is an implementation period. Absolutely. Mm. Like Alico. I don't know exactly what it is, but I suspect it's probably 3 months, you know, because it's a B2B, you know, enterprise.
Yes.
Software package. You've got to train people on it, you know, to get them to actually use it.
That's okay, isn't it? Because I found a few of the turnaround software things I've been involved in as a small shareholder, you know, they've said we're not tailor making it for each individual client. We're just doing standard code. And when they've done that, you know, that's then customizable in minor ways. But just having one set of code to update seems to be the key, doesn't it, to making these things scalable?
Yeah, the key. Or should we say the giveaway, if it isn't, if it isn't sort of standardized, is look at the SaaS. If there's an 80% or 90% recurring revenues and it's on a SaaS model, then invariably it's hosted software and then has to go one to many. can't go one to bespoke.
Let me put a lamp on so people might actually be able to see me. Is that any better? Well, not really.
Not really. I can hear
you
anyway.
I just look like this sort of rather sort of pink oval shape.
Yeah. Okay, I've got Tribal, but I won't talk about Tribal because we did that before. I think we've gone through that before Christmas, didn't we?
Yes.
Water Intelligence, I think we've gone through before as well. There's actually a guy asking about Water Intelligence. I mean, all I would say is, you know, it basically does minimally invasive, you know, leak detection and repair for homes and stuff. And you've got to look forward to next year to see it. But yeah, I think that's probably, we've talked about that two or three times, haven't we?
Yes. I think it's good. I like Water Intelligence. So yeah, I'd echo Paul's view on that. I think it's an interesting company. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, I mean, your view on Tribal, you're pretty happy with that as well.
I get what you're saying. My main thing that interests me about, I mean, it's so accident prone historically, that puts me off. But I have to say, the fact that they turned away the cash takeover bid, I think 74p, wasn't it? Yeah, there you are. It's on your slide. Mm. That really made it very, very interesting, around 40p. But it's up to 47p now, doesn't it? So, yeah, I think you might be onto something with that one, Paul, but I don't really know.
Just wait until that unbundling happens. They separate the software from the services business. And if they spin the services off or sell it, then you've basically got a pure SaaS business there, software. So that'll definitely be a trophy asset to take. Okay, good. What we got next? Vitrex. I think we've probably talked about that.
We've done that one. We both like that one. Yeah, no, you gave a good explanation for what they do and why you think it's good. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it looks interesting.
Yeah, industrials. Ixico, I think we've talked about as well, Okay, brains behind the brain scans. There's lots happening in that area. Essensys, I think we talked about as well, didn't we? Which was the office software.
Yeah, you asked. Well, you flagged that up to me, and I thought, actually, I'll have a proper look at it. And I think I emailed you afterwards, didn't I? And say, do you know what, Paul? I think you could be onto something here. I think that one is more interesting than that I'd previously realized. I think they did an Investor Meet Company video webinar recently, which I haven't watched yet, but you've just reminded me, I will have a look at that. So yeah, potentially interesting for Essensys.
Yeah, it was an interesting couple of comments actually in the Guardian today, and they were saying that the work from home sort of, like, you know, hybrid sort of working, etc., is now going more towards coming back into the office. So Amazon in the UK has said everybody, all its employees, has to work 5 days a week in the office. Yeah. And there was quite a lot of financial businesses in London now forcing people to come at least 3 days into the office. Yes. But if that happens, then it's hybrid working, and it's game on for these guys. And that's one of the reasons that's the most important. I think the global office market seems to be turning now as more staff are going back in, but it's going to be on a work hybrid home, and these guys should do well. So anyway, I've lost quite a bit of money on it so far, but I've got a long-term time horizon, so I'm prepared to hold it.
Yeah, I think it looks interesting. And the CEO here has got a lot of skin in the game, hasn't it? Oh, it's coming back to me. It was a massive cash burner. They've almost wiped out their entire cash pile, but the Mark Furness, the founder CEO, does seem to have realised that he can't run out of money, and it does look like he's turning it around, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't like these things where people say, "Oh, if this, and this happens, you know, it could two or three bag." I like to see an actual firm evidence in the figures and the trading updates that gives me the numbers that saying, actually, yes, it's not going to run out of cash. And I think in this case, I got that when I looked at the numbers on Essensys. I can't find my notes, but yeah, I think it's quite credible, this thing. I would. Yeah, I think you're right to probably, I mean, I can't advise you, obviously, but I think you're probably right to sit tight on that one, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the other, we had net cash in July of about 3 mil. It'll burn through a bit, but then it's been going to be cash positive later on. But the only thing I would say, the strategy of waiting to get the confirm the good news, it might work on certain stocks, but on high sort of like, you know, SaaS bases with good gross margins, unless you plant your flag to the mast, the prices will just go to the moon once the market sniffs out that this business is doing well, you see. So you have to actually go ahead of that to get the benefit, because if you want to basically have assurance that it's all working, then frankly it will be double the price than when you first
you're right. And I've got to say as well, in the sort of 25 years or so I've been in the small caps market, I've seen a lot of these small loss-making software companies actually achieve break-even and move into profit. It often takes a long time, but I think people who just dismiss them as rubbish, cash-burning, blue-sky things are actually wrong. If they're building, you know, that recurring revenue stream, you've seen that with PCI Pal, you've seen it with Interseed and Beaks. Quite a lot of them do actually work. You just have to be patient, and as you say, by the time people can see they've gone past the tipping point, you're paying 2, 3, 4 times as much for them.
And I'd make a distinction between consumer software, which I don't tend to buy, compared to B2B software, which has high barriers to entry, high exit costs, and is very sticky, and because people train on it, and therefore the change costs are so high, and therefore you get a big sort of like recurring revenue stream and a much higher multiple.
Yes, yeah, very good point. I mean, once somebody's in with the client, you know, they'll probably be in there 10 years plus, won't they? With B2B software. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Okay, good. I think we've talked about CML microsystems, haven't we? Yeah. You quite like that, I think, the balance sheet, don't you? I mean, basically, they do low power, mixed signal, compound semiconductors for communications, 70% gross margins here, which is, frankly, brilliant for a semi producer.
It's an each way bet, isn't it? You've got very good asset backing. They've got this large campus where they work from that they're now turning into a business park. It's got another big plot of land as well. So you're getting some upside from the property development. It's always had a lot of cash, but I think it's spent a fair bit of that on some peculiar American acquisition that has actually dented the short-term profitability, I think. Historical, very good track record. It's always profitable. But it's just not clear it's not clear that this can scale up. It seems to be a sort of niche chip designer that it's done a hell of a lot better than some of the more recent chip designer floats. So I think it's potentially interesting. Yeah. But I'm not sure what the catalyst is for this to really grow aggressively, because it isn't doing it at the moment. I nearly bought some recently, I've got to disclose, but didn't in the end.
Yeah. Good.
So okay, what do you think is going to change then at CML to make it, you know, be a 4 or 5 bagger? That's the key question.
I think the next sort of, not the next 6 months, but the 6 months from 6 to 12, you'll see a significant change in the destocking on a lot of these communications applications. And whereas, you know, you might look at it and say you were a bit skeptical of the California acquisition they made. But actually, I think that is fabulous because it's really super fast, sort of like 5G infrastructure that's chips they're actually bought for sort of a new mobile. They've got a unique position in digital broadcast. Satellite is both geospatial and low Earth orbits of it. And I just think they've got huge trends behind it, and you know, they don't need to sell too many of these to, you know, to make a real, you know, real profit margins. As like, as it gets, because if you sell about another 10 million at 70% gross margins, you put a 7 million, you know, basically profit down to your bottom line. So I actually think what we'll see is the industry destocking will finish. You'll get the long secular trends, and then you'll see huge operating leverage coming through. And they've got a really rock solid balance sheet with spare cash and spare land. Yes. That's what I think will happen.
I like that aspect of it, actually, that it's underpinned at least partially by the surplus assets. Because then, you know, if the product side of things does go badly wrong, you won't lose all your money. You'll just maybe lose half of it or something, which evens it up, doesn't it? Could it be the next Filtronic? That's the big question, isn't it?
I would absolutely love it. I would never suggest anything's gonna like four bag in a year though.
Do you know, I was so slow on that one. I didn't spot it until, you know, the big gain had been had. It's a pity, isn't it? But well done to everyone who did well on that. So
Okay, good. Let's go through a few questions halfway through. We've got a guy called Worn Out. I feel a bit worn out myself after after New Year's Eve. And you must be worn out after playing the semi-finals of the PDC.
Oh.
But anyway, so Worn Out, he's asking about Close Brothers and whether it will survive the car finance. Because this is a really distressed special situation.
It is. I nearly bought some of these a few weeks ago. Because it's traveling at it's valued at 0.22 times its tangible book value, which is crazy. I know. Yeah. I mean, it's there. But you've got to look at it and compare it with STB, which is in a similar case. They've got massive exposure to the vehicle finance scandal, which is the latest PPI type compensation thing. And I mean, press reports are saying this could be up to $25 billion. In compensation to consumers. All the no win, no fee type ambulance chasing firms are on this. You know, you've probably seen the adverts yourself on online saying, you know, did you buy a car between this or that date? So we all know that everybody knows, including the company. They've sold their fund management arm, I think, Close Brothers, haven't they, to raise some cash.
Yes.
So the only question really is, has the market, you know, is 80% of the firm's net asset value going to get wiped out by this car financing compensation issue, or has the market overreacted? And all I can say is I have absolutely no idea. So for me, it would just be pure gambling. And that's not, you know, I like to skew risk reward in my favor. And if I have no idea what the risk reward actually is, which is the case with Close Brothers, it's just going to go in the don't know tray for me. But have you looked at it, Paul?
No, all I would say is there's been so many scare titles in the newspapers who say this 25 billion sort of banded around, etc. Then it's probably whittled down a lot of the sort of like the fortitude of existing shareholders in there.
Yes.
And therefore you've had a small window that you've had a lot of people exiting at the same time over the last 6 months, never wanting to sort of take this risk. So I would say you are taking a big risk in deciding whether you're buying it, etc. However, having said that, my guess is, or my instinct is saying that it's more than priced into the stock. So whereas if you were looking at it on a balance of probabilities, it should be priced at sort of like 50 or 60% of net assets, whereas actually it's priced as 20%. And therefore, if it comes to what the reality is rather than the scare stories, then you'll probably see a good return. But it is just a punt, and it would be just be my instinct that I think the stories has probably moved the share price. The narrative has moved the share price more than the reality has.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there was a blip surge in it recently, wasn't there? I think when they were given, they were given leave to appeal the judgment or something, and the shares did spike up, but then people sold into it again. I mean, I must admit, we all like a bit of a punt occasionally, don't we? I think for me personally, you know, would I punt 1% of my portfolio on it or 0.5% of my portfolio on it? Yeah, I think I probably would, just for a bit of fun.
Yeah.
The danger is you do that. You put 0.5% of your portfolio in it. It drops another 20 or 30% and you double up. And you double up again. Before you know it, you've lost 3 or 4 or 5% of your portfolio because you're too blooming stubborn to ditch the things. That's what I've done in the past, anyway. Which is one of the reasons why it's maybe a good idea if you're a bit like me and you get a bit carried away. It's maybe best just to steer clear altogether.
I would steer clear myself, just because the probability of, you know, it's too low of this being a winner, even though you could probably double your money or triple your money quite quickly. And I prefer to go to more, you know, greater hit rated type of stocks rather than actually just a total stab in the dark.
I agree. I mean, my mentor taught me out of this one. We had a chat on the phone and he said, look, Scotty, you know, you're risking 100% of your money with this potentially. You know, for a speculative 100% upside or 50% upside, he said, your risk reward isn't good enough. He said, just buy a cheap REIT that's copper bottomed. You're probably going to make 20 or 30%, collect in 8 or 9%, and you're risking hardly any of your capital. And I've got to say, he's right, isn't he?
Yeah, no. We've got a couple of comments coming in. One from Barry Addison. He's saying, can we have a quick whip round to buy Scotty a backdrop without wrinkles? Ben Sharman adds it to bed sheet.
No, it's not actually a bed sheet, but I was going, yeah, no, point taken. I'm really not. And I've got my manual lamp as well that I'm using to. It's like an episode of The Simpsons, isn't it? I should put it under my chin.
Right, we've got one. We've got a question asking, which has had a profit warning, got decimated before Christmas.
What was that?
Is it? No. I'll just come. It's AJC2. He's asking about solid state, which is basically industrial ruggedized electronics supplier that got hit by that defense review, I think, if I remember rightly.
That's right. Yeah, delayed orders or frozen orders because of the defense review. What a pity, because this has actually been a very nice company, Solid State has, over many, many years. I see the price looks as if it's finding a floor, maybe. Mm. They did. It got absolutely. I mean, the main thing, I think we might have discussed this before, Paul. The problem with it is that, you know, it's totally undermined my desire to invest in pretty much anything that does sort of large, lumpy contracts. Because this just shows you one big contract, or it just suddenly gets put on hold and you lose 2/3 of your money as an investor. So, that's put me right off. Anyway, on the H1 results were out on 10th of December, which I covered. I wrote about those in my Substack daily report. It actually bounced 13% on those H1 results. And I concluded it looks to be stabilizing after the recent bombshell profit warnings. And the pipeline is building. The balance sheet's okay at Solid State, but it still looks pricey on the current greatly reduced forecasts. So I just think you've got to be careful. Don't look at the chart and think, oh, it's cheap now. Actually, it's not cheap based on the fact that the revised forecast is so much lower. So if you're buying it at the current level, which I think is about £1.39, you are in effect saying, right, I'm expecting this to beat the current reduced forecast. So yeah, a little bit of caution. But anyway, I've concluded amber on my color coding on that, basically saying I'm neutral on it. I think it's good to see that things aren't getting any worse anyway. Have you looked at it, Paul?
No, I haven't, no, but I would say it's another one where you've got sort of basically they've got relationships with their customers, maybe in defense or in ruggedized, you know, sort of like products, electronics, etc. And you can't just rock up. You have to be quality assured, security assured, and basically, you know. And so consequently, given that now that the shares have been knocked so much, this is the kind of moment that if there's a predator out there, they'll go. They'll put a number on the table and try and buy them. So, you know, Because basically you just need all these accreditations, and these guys have got it, which you can't see in the numbers. It takes years to get. So
that's a very good point. Yeah. And I think you've also got to think about the security threats directly towards these companies. I mean, the Russians, as we suspect, are actually physically attacking some Western suppliers of arms. And frankly, from their point of view, you can see why. You know, we'd probably do the same if we were at war with somebody and Russia was piling weapons in. So that's an added risk for companies like this, isn't it? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
No, it's right. Okay, good. We've got another one coming. You've got Paul the Parrot again. He's asking
He's on every time, isn't he? Hello, Paul.
He's asking about Volex, which I think had some news this morning, didn't it? Well, a couple of days ago.
Yeah, that was the only company I looked at today, actually. It was there's just hardly any news at all today, so it was barely worth commenting on. Deferred consideration payment was made, 10 million euros and about 8 million pounds, I think, in shares. So a small dilution, 1.6% dilution. It blipped down at the open today, but I quickly put people right on that, saying actually this is all these deferred consideration payments were all expected. If you look back at the June 2023 announcement of the acquisition of Muscat Ticaret, I think it's called Turkish. Yeah, quite a big acquisition. Anyway, it's gone well. They say today, yes, the deferred consideration payments have been triggered because it's achieved, it's beaten its EBITDA targets. But if you look back at the original announcement, which I did today, it actually said we fully expect these deferred consideration payments to be made and to be met. So basically, it's, you know, nothing to see here, move on type of thing. Now, the shares have sold off quite a bit recently. I think that's nothing company specific. It was throughout 2024, Volex, its electrical cables and assemblies, every update was in line or slightly ahead. But if you dig under the detail, it was easing down the broker forecast a little. So do you know what I mean? I mean, in line with updates, you always check, well, have the expectations actually been changed? And the clever companies just slowly tip off the brokers or just ease the numbers down a bit. Do you know what I mean? And then the next update is in line. But it actually would have been a mild profit warning if they on the original things. So maybe I think a few people might have spotted that with Volex. And also it tried to buy TT Electronics, which didn't work. And that seemed to knock confidence a bit in it. Yeah. I think maybe some people thought that was one acquisition too far because it would have left them too highly indebted, I think. But I like it. I think the forward PE is just under 10 at the moment. The debt is okay. It's not excessive. Very good track record over the last few years. So I like it. I put it every year. I put it on my top 20 and it goes nowhere. So I've dropped it down to my runners up list, which I'm going to publish over the weekend for this year. But well, anyway, I won't ramble on anymore. What's your view, Paul?
No. I think you're absolutely spot on. It's a good quality company run by an excellent management team. One thing I would just watch in 2025, and you'll find out on the 20th or 21st of January, is this susceptible to tariffs? Because I know it's got quite a lot of nearshoring production facilities. One, lots in Turkey, obviously, with this, which should be fairly much okay. But I know it's got also a similar big production or cabling in Mexico. And Trump is sort of like, Trump is thinking about 25%. So these low cost nearshore type of production facilities, it may be a beneficiary. I don't know. But all I would say is just have a think how that potentially could work with the supply chains, because you might find actually it was cost competitive. But from the 21st of January, compared to people, you know, rivals who produce in the US, it ain't cost competitive. I don't know.
That's such a good point. Yeah. Do you know what? I hadn't even thought of that. Isn't that ridiculous? Yeah. Yeah. This is why.
He hasn't announced it yet.
No, I know. And it could all be a bluff, couldn't it? It could be
negotiations and
tactics. But I mean, this is why I think it's so useful for investors of all types to just bounce ideas around between each other, because somebody will think of something that you hadn't thought of, especially with me, because I cover nearly 700 companies. I can't possibly go into great depth on any of them, really.
What do you mean you only cover 700? Okay, we got a quick question, Paul, from Lemon Physically. He's asking about which sectors are you expecting to outperform and underperform in 2025.
God almighty. You better start. You're more top down, aren't you?
I would say retail for starters is going to underperform because of the higher the cost, and I don't think they've got much pricing power. I think the contractors likewise are going to struggle because they've got huge workforces You know, they're going to struggle to actually have the pricing power. And the ones which will outperform or anything with pricing power and ice growth margins can basically absorb the cost and move it forward. So I would take it on, look at your gross margin, gives you an indication of ups of underperforming and overperforming.
Yeah, I mean, I sound a bit of a thicko, but I don't think I can really add much to that. Maybe the ones I'm nervous about. I mean, the contractors thing, Paul, I would just say there was something in the papers saying that the government has said to contractors it will allow them to put price rises through caused by that. So it may not be such a big issue for contractors.
Good point.
I don't know. And retail, I think you're right about the wages cost thing. But the best players like your Marks and Spencers, your Next, seem to just sail through these things unscathed, don't you? And you've got significantly above inflation pay rises now coming through. So I think if something's sold off massively because of the national insurance issue, there might selectively be buying opportunities there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But overall sectors, well, I don't know, I can't. Staffing, I'm still worried about. That seems to be getting worse and worse, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. With hiring freezes and things. I don't know.
House building, I'd watch out. Just if you're a house builder with the cladding issue, make sure that they're not hugely exposed. And even if they're not exposed, the government could easily slap a 4-5% extra sort of levy on their selling prices or their corporate tax or whatever it is. So,
yeah, and somebody was telling me that the building sector, I can't remember who told me this, but they said talking to top brass in the house builders and the building supplies sector, they're now saying the recovery may not even start till 2026. Whereas not long ago it was early 2025, wasn't it? So again, I'm biding my time on them. I'm not touching any house builders at the moment. I'm happy with one or two of the really strongly performing building supplies companies though. Because the other thing is, I don't think we factored in a cyclical upturn. You know, in a lot of these sectors, you're getting a low PE and possibly near bottom of the cycle earnings, which is a lovely combination. If you can kind of just cast your mind forward 6 months, you know, we could be kicking ourselves for not buying some of these things.
Well, we did see that, didn't we, after the great financial crisis. The little small caps had a great time between about and sort of mid-2009 to 2014-15. It was just like a fantastic, you know, period for small cap investors. Okay, good. Let's just run through a few more ones we've got on the list. We talked that SML. HVivo, quickie on this one.
Basically, we both like this one,
It's basically just challenge trials for big pharma. I mean, it's got a rock solid balance sheet, good forward order book, good valuation, you know, sort of like 11.5 times EPS growth, 18%. So it's on a low peg ratio. The only downside I could possibly see, even, you know, but it's hard getting into this, it's hugely regulated, is that these orders can be lumpy. It looks a bargain to me, but I don't own it because I have too much life sciences and healthcare already. But
It fell off a cliff, didn't it, in early to mid-November? Yeah. But quite a lot of small caps did. Yeah. So it looks to me, and it's tried to bounce 1, 2, 3 times since, and every time it's been overwhelmed by sellers. So it's just one of those situations where you have to ask yourself, do the sellers know something we don't? Yeah. I think one of my readers, B&B, who's very, very good, he said that it was because some peers in America mentioned a slowdown. Oh, I think we've talked about this one before as well, Paul. But I have to say, I mean, Stockopedia's got the forward PE is only 11.4.
Yeah, I know.
Given that it's got plenty of cash on the balance sheet as well. So yeah, I'd be tempted to pick up a few of these personally for my trading account.
I would agree. Yeah,
20 or 30% bounce could be on the cards, I would say.
Yeah, and also I haven't actually interviewed the CEO, but I've seen him a few times on, you know, IMCs and in doing interviews, and he's super committed, this guy. So
to be fair to him, he's done what he said he was going to do as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's good, Paul.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Now, one you don't like, I know, is Argentex, and the reason why this basically does white glove forex payments and you know, to transactions for institutions.
White gloves. Where do the gloves come from?
The difference is basically rather than actually doing it all through the electronically through computer systems, their clients are institutions and like fund managers and corporates who want quite sophisticated treasury management services. So these guys forwards, they do futures, they do lots of special structured Forex products. So it isn't as though you're basically pushing a button and just doing spots. These ones are doing tens and hundreds of millions of currency in one shot, and they're trying to do it over a long time. So these guys are experts. They're basically an outsourced treasury management business. And they've been they've had a new management team in. And the reason why I'm down on my investment so far, but the reason why I mention it to is the CEO, who I've spoken to a number of times, Jim Ormond, is super committed and dead experienced. He's got a great reputation. And he's trying to develop a sort of best-in-class B2B international payments platform to add on to this business. Now, I think this is a could potentially do really well next year on two bases. Firstly, is if you actually just look at it on the downside, okay, the shares trade at 28p, net tangible assets, which is largely cash, okay, is basically 33p. So you've already got, but your price is already below net tangible assets. And what's not in the net tangible assets is their licenses, which they have for the UK, Australia, and Europe. And we know from people like Revolut, it takes flipping ages to get these licenses. So I would say the licenses myself, and this would be a finger out the air, would be worth another 8p per share. Okay, so I think you've got asset backing of about 40p per share against a share price of 28. That's a liquidation value of 40p, just about. Obviously, wouldn't be quite, but you've got limited downside. But on the upside, if they do get this international payments platform working, this could do 10p of EPS easily in 2026. Okay, and on a 10 times multiple, you'll hit a quid. 10 times 10, even I can do the maths. And it's just too cheap. You've had the chairman has just bought in December £200,000 worth of shares.
Oh, really?
And the CFO put about 20 grand in, and the CEO had already bought in the placing. I just think this one has got it's dead quiet. There's no news. Now it isn't going to change overnight, okay? And I could be smoking something, so you've got to take this with a fair. But I would say this was my, when you put your competition for 2025, I actually put this one as being something that could move the dial in my portfolio next year, because I think it's got limited downside but lots of upside. Even though I know it's hated by a lot of people, but I actually think with a new management team and what they're trying to do, the big risk to me is that they spend a lot of money and a lot of time building this international payments platform, and it's out of date when they finally launch it, which will be mid next year. Okay, if that happens, then they'll just be doing the white glove service. But if it does work, then you'll see a multiple increase in this business. In my view, 72% gross margins. This you know, the business does.
Funnily enough, when I last looked at it, which is way back in on the 9th of July, I actually moved it up to moderately positive. So I reviewed the H1 trading update. So this is out of date, obviously, because it's from 9th of July, but I rated it amber green. So actually, I was moderately positive last time. So I'll have a fresh look at that. Let me make a note of that one. What is it? AGFX, isn't it?
AGFX, yeah.
It's been very accident prone. Lots of things have been murky or gone wrong with this thing. So it does have a wobbly history. But as you say, it's got net asset value there, net tangible asset value. So yeah, I'll have a fresh look. So at the moment, I'd say I'm probably neutral on that one, but or moderately. So have you recycled your profits from Equals into this then, Paul?
No, I haven't sold. No, I haven't sold Equals. Equals is still my largest position. I'm waiting. I think that will... Well, anyway, we'll find out. The vote is on the 8th, so that's Wednesday of next week. We'll find out. I think it'll go ahead at 140, but I do think there's an outside chance that maybe one of the fund managers twists the arm of the consortia to tick up their price. But I could be totally wrong there. Anyway, I've decided I'm not selling my shares. I'm holding
But just to challenge you on that, entirely your decision, your money and all the rest of it. But if you sold in the market now at about £1.34, you'd also not have the risk that the institutions vote down the deal, which would see it down to probably about £1.10, £1 or a pound even. So is it worth taking that deal risk for 5 years?
I think so, because I think there's a 90% chance it's going through at 140. Remember, I've got quite a few shares, so
that's why I was worried.
I know. Hey, it'd be a pain if it doesn't go through. But I think there's about a 10% chance of them basically being nudged up to say 145. I don't think there's hardly any chance of it not happening, to be perfectly honest.
Okay.
And the reason why is that if you're the consortia and you've got a bunch of private equity, okay, if for some reason it's not voted through, are they really going to waste a year of due diligence arguing about 5p, 10p? And the answer to that is no. They'll basically have an agreement. So I don't think the consortia will walk away unless the shareholders come back and say, actually, I want £2, and then they would walk away. But I think... I don't know. I mean, it's my total get. Anyway, that's what the shares are saying. The shares are saying it's going through at 140.
That's true. Are you not tempted to sell half just to hedge your bets?
That you raise a really good point, and I understand where you're coming from. But no, I'll keep it in there. So
okay. Well, good luck.
I'll throw the dice.
Yeah, I'll keep my fingers and my toes crossed.
No. I'll be doing it for you. Or for me anyway. Yeah. Okay, right. Michaelmas Brick, we've had a question on that one as well. We've talked about it. Basically premium bricks in the UK. Yeah. I think these are a trophy asset. They've already had in buyer interest from Fortira, according to Investors Chronicle, just before Christmas. They're basically, and to me, they'll either organic growth when the market turns and they start, you know, basically breaking new ground, which is what they're doing. This will migrate towards the 150, 160, and on a takeover it'll be 180, 190. So I just think this is a low
thumbs up from me as well, Paul. We've covered this before a couple of times. We both think it's really, really good. You've got a 4.9% dividend yield. It's only 1.4 times net tangible asset value, and we could be at the bottom of the cycle for earnings. So, I love it.
Yeah, and then the next one is basically Fincetta, which is an equals Mark II, okay?
Yes.
It's a platform, and it processes in largely spot transactions, not the white glove type of stuff. And the guy who runs it, James Hickman, is again absolutely right on it, he's super committed, They're basically trading at sort of 12.5 times PE, but they're growing sales at 20% per annum. And I think when you work it out on an EBITDA multiple, they're on about 5 or 6 times, whereas Eagles has just gone for 12 times. I just think this one's growing as fast as Eagles. I just think that the guy knows what he's doing. He's the model is there, and people want platforms basically to be able to to do their international payments on a B2B basis. That's the key. It's a B2B international payments, and you can't really, it's difficult to copy B2B because you need the treasury function, and you need basically they're much bigger and highly small structured deals. So
I've looked at this one. I did catch a nice move up on this in early 2024 personally, but the more I researched it, the more not uncomfortable but less convinced I became. It seems to be dependent on a few key salespeople. That was what I discovered, which just kind of made me a little bit uneasy. And I think they've got some sort of connected party relationship with some of the salespeople. I can't remember exactly how it worked, but not madly keen on this personally. But you know, this payment companies pace a lot better than me, so you're probably.
Well, I mean, I think it's a winner basically, and at 22 million quid I could see this one easily doubling, but that's why it's in there. I mean, it's a higher risk because it's smaller, and it's in B2B payments, and you either like your B2B payments or you don't like B2B payments, but it's a platform play that's growing high. It has highest growth margins. The more it puts through the top line, the bigger movement it's going to be on the bottom line, and it's run by a really quality, top quality management team. So that's why it's in there. Okay.
I just don't know why people wouldn't just use Revolut or something like that if they want to
Because great question, and Wise, but they're mainly consumer. They're mainly basically, it's like the Wise is peer-to-peer, and I think Revolut might be peer-to-peer. And they just hold pools of currency around the world, and just they don't even move the currency. They basically just they act
credit
as a bookmaker.
They
act as a bookmaker, and you can't do that with B2B, because if you try and do it with 100 million quid, you're going to have a huge Forex. These guys, Finseta, Equals, and Argentex, don't take the principal risk. They book it off. They take it through likes of Barclays and Citibank on the foreign currency. So they haven't got the balance sheet risk. That's one of the reasons why the Revolus, the Wises, can only really do the small stuff, because they don't want to take the balance sheet risk of the big stuff.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Okay, MPAC, I mean, it's basically high-speed packaging automation. The key bits here, I would say, about MPAC is, one, it's still trading, and the shares have done really well, but it's still trading at a pretty low valuation, 12.5 times PE, good solid balance sheet. They've just made two transformational acquisitions, which increase their global footprint and their product set. And they're just in the right place at the right time, because you can have reshoring. They've got... They're based in their manufacturing largely in the States, so they'll benefit from sort of tariffs. They've also got a manufacturing to service the Europe, and they've got manufacturing to service Asia as well. And the big problem a lot of people, you know, thought about MPAC before these two deals was it was lumpy deals. Yeah. Now you won't, because it's doubled its turnover. And anyway. Great management team again. I just think this one is another one which is going to be a beneficiary of more automation, more robotics, and Industry 4.0. And it's only on 12.5 times.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, the history of the company, I know you'll say it's different now because it's bigger, which is a fair point, but it's had, you know, a good run for a year or two, and then it's all gone right back down again. That's the only thing. Maybe link it back to that thing with solid state, you know.
Yeah.
It's still lumpy, even if it may be less lumpy. So I think, you know, the problem with all these types of companies is, you know, how can you know that the profits are sustainable? That's the trouble, isn't it? And as we saw with solid state, there's some glitch in the order book, and bang, you're right back down to square one. So I can see that, yes, it's definitely in a good patch and it's doing really well, and the valuation does look reasonable, but it doesn't really appeal to me, if I'm honest. But I can see why you like it. I'm not saying any of your stuff is wrong. I'm just saying it's the sector risk doesn't really. And, you know, how many other companies are making equipment like this? There must be thousands of them all over the world.
No, they're not. There's only about three, and they're mainly in the two other ones. Yeah, the two other ones do full service. They're in Italy, actually, and these knock the sock off the Italian producers. What's quite interesting, I spoke to Lawrence Hughes of Dowgate. You know, he's basically now turned into the Richard Staveley, you know, sort of like small cap. He benefited from Wynwood, and his small cap portfolio has done fabulous. Anyway, this is his largest position. I remember chatting to him in December, and he said, "This is like a great company." So anyway.
All right. Well, that does sound interesting. Yeah, maybe I need to have a fresh look at that one. Thanks, Paul.
We've got a comment on from Paul the Parrot again. He's asking, we're not asking, but about Volex. He says Nat Rothschild, who's the CEO, exec chairman of Volex, says he's happy with Donald Trump getting elected, which suggests that he's okay with the tariffs. But
that's a good point.
Good point.
Yeah. Although given that you can't do anything about it now, I suppose saying that you're happy is a good, a sensible move. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we've talked about Gooch and Howco, who bought Photonics Expert, basically.
Yeah, we have.
I think they could well get taken out, and you'll see operating leverage. But I know we've talked about that a couple of times. Avintraz, have we talked about Avintraz before?
I think so. Yes.
It's a specialist sort of like engineer that's really, you have to work out on some of the parts, and it's going through a monetization section of its engineering businesses over the next 18 months. And if you look at the brokers, that could well put out £3-4 a share compared to the current share price of sort of like £3.70 or something. And then it's got a really sort of like high potential medical devices business, x-rays and small form x-rays and helium-free MRI scanners that could be valued another £2.5. So you can easily get to £7.50 for this anyway, I actually did speak to another guy yesterday about it. I mean, Christopher Mills owns them, and a whole bunch of other really good value investors own them as an unbundling point. But there's another guy yesterday, Jamie Ward, and he was saying that you could actually get 10 quid out of it. But I think it's the reason for putting these is the management team have just done a fabulous job. They've delivered 20% near enough compound average share price return over the last 15 years. So you just can't ignore that. They're just brilliant at what they do.
Roger McDowell, isn't it? I remember going to a presentation years ago where he was talking about their strategy. They sort of buy things and turn them around, don't they? And then once they've got investee companies into shape, they sell them on and buy something else. The only thing with those is it takes quite a few years to turn around a company, doesn't it? But I've got nothing against it. The valuation looks reasonable. It's got a good reputation. So, yeah. And actually, the shares have held up well since everything small cap peaked in 2021, didn't it? And lots of things have come down a lot. This one's actually just drifted slightly down in the last 3 years, which is a bloody good performance in a small cap market that's almost halved. So, yeah, relative outperformance.
Yeah, they're big into defense and nuclear. So they're in pretty good secular growth drivers there.
Yeah, good.
Well, this is a small one, basically on Commune. The reason why this is on is because they're one of the only world providers of sort of like special autoimmune sort of like service businesses for biotech. So what they do is, just to give you an example, you've got a biotech business that's developing a new immunotherapy for oncology, or alternatively a new autoimmune treatment, something like, you know, Humira, which I can't remember which company, but so these really big blockbuster drugs, etc. Now the regulatory bodies like the FDA are all insisting that they look at how the positives and the negative benefits of using your immune system to use that to cure that particular patient. These guys have a repository of about 9,000 sort of like proteins and antigens that allow the biotech companies to not only develop their drugs better that use the immune system, things like autoimmune and bio, but equally they allow them to prove or to show to the authorities they don't have any negative side effects from that particular immunotherapy or that treatment. They had a really tough time after on the pandemic. They're on a new management team, and they doubled revenues last year from a small base, and they're going to double again, and they're on track to double again. The reason why this is interesting is because their break-even sales is about $6.5 million. Okay. And they should do more than that this year, and therefore they'll hit the profit forecast. And then you only need like 80% drop through rates, and therefore if you get to about 10, then likewise this will be up. But I would say it's high risk, high reward. However, you can see how this could do significantly well if they can continue winning all their contracts. They've won a shed load of contracts just recently.
Okay, well, that sounds, I mean, I wouldn't touch it myself, because, you know, it's just done a small placing of about 2 million in October, you know, historically massive losses every year. So, no, it's not the type of thing I would personally look at. But if it's recently, if there's been materially good, positive recent news, then it might be worth a fresh look. So, that's another one for my pad to have a little look at. Yeah.
That will be, I think their year end is August, I think it is. So, it'll be the outlook for August 26. It'll be the second half of next year that the shares will really, people start seeing how this business is really shaping up, and you'll see that profit come drop through. So if they continue winning contracts, it could be a first half mover, but I suspect you'll start seeing some real movement in the second half. But anyway, we'll wait and see.
Oh, well, sounds speculative, but I can check that one out. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, Venture Life, I think we've talked about before. I
mean, we've done that one to death, I think, haven't we?
Yeah, okay, that's good. Let's move on to that one. Okay, Supreme, I think we've done as well.
Yeah. That's doing well. Shares are doing well. So, good to see.
Supreme's a cracking management team. They've got,
very shrewd.
Just bought Thai food tea, for a teacup. It's like for not much at all. So they've done well. Yeah. But anyway, wait. CVS Group.
We did that one. Yep.
Yeah. The thesis on that one is that I don't think the CMA review is going to be half as bad as what people expect. But we'll wait and see. Traxys is effectively an expert in all software and hardware for the rail industry. And I think this one will do well, particularly in the States next year, if they do get tariffs, because it will force all the US freight guys to really maximize the utilization of their rail networks. And these guys have shown what they can do in the UK. And I think you'll start seeing some really good high value contracts won. I could be wrong, but they're one of the few companies in the world who can do this.
I see it's come down a lot. I hadn't realized it was all the way down to £5 a share. I've followed Traxys for many, many years, and it's always overpriced. But how looking at today, this could be a good entry point, actually. Forward PE is only 14.6. It's usually much, much higher than that. John MacArthur did this, didn't he? An acquisitive thing. I think he's now just a consultant, and it's got new management. Could be worth a fresh look, that one.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think we've probably done all of them. Let me that's it. Sorted. So all done and dusted. Good. Okay. Well, just check. Is there anything else on the old news wires to have a look at? I don't think there are on the questions coming in. So big thanks to everyone for your questions. And big thanks again, Paul.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. I enjoy that. This lighting at my end is ludicrous. honestly, it's like I'm sitting around a campfire or something with a torch. Well, I am. So I promise you, I'll get this sorted, and we'll get rid of the creases as well for next time. Yeah.
The big final question that or prediction we need from you, Paul, who's going to win the PDC darts tonight between Luke the Nuke or Michael Van Gerwen?
No idea. I hope Luke wins because he's 17.
It's all that, isn't it?
45. How can anyone look that old when they're 17? But anyway, let's not go there.
All right then. Thanks very much again, Paul, and look forward in chatting Paul. Next Friday.
Yeah, have a good weekend, everyone. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.